right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we're going to be talking about what, I don't know, maybe the most infamous movie that's come out this year, maybe. Of course, it didn't get to the theaters because of everything that's going on right now. But I think Josh Trank's Capone, starring Tom Hardy, was planned for a theatrical release and is out now on VOD. And it is something, let's put it that way. I didn't really know what to expect going into it. I mean, I had seen the trailer. I think everybody watched the trailer because, you know, Tom Hardy playing Al Capone, how could you not be at least a little bit interested in that? But I still didn't really know what to expect based on the weirdness of it and just the behind the scenes stories that were going around with this movie and with Josh Trank's career and everything. So it was something I really just didn't know what to expect going in, and I kind of liked the movie. I think I liked the movie even more after talking about it with our guest today, Michael Keane. We get into a really long, great conversation, lots of puzzle pieces. There's a lot to unpack with this movie. And so it's a great one. I'm looking forward to this conversation, to sharing it with you all. Before we get into it, though, I do want to remind you to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. And of course, you can rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where I'm sure there's a bunch of Fantastic Four fans in that group, as well as Chronicle fans and Josh Trank in general fans and Capone fans. And just there's always all kinds of crazy conversations happening in that group around all the movies that we talk about here on the show and everything else happening in Hollywood and the world of movies. So if you like movies, you should join the group and talk about them with us. So, I think let's get into this one. Like I said, it's a long one, but there's a lot of great puzzle pieces. So enjoy this conversation about Capone. All right, so joining me today for what should be a fun one is Michael Keane. Michael, how's it going, man?
Oh, well, I just rewatched a good chunk of Capone for this very special episode of your program. And I gotta say, everything's looking up. It's doing good.
I feel like that's a great way to start any day, isn't it? Is watching this movie.
Hells to the yeah. Although I feel like your listeners are going to be a little upset because I get the feeling that there's not going to be a lot of conflict within this particular episode.
I don't know. It's going to be a little all over the place. I mean, I know I'm sitting here, I've got my notes up in front of me, and my notes are kind of a mess, but, you know, this movie is very weird. It's intentionally off-putting, and there's going to be a lot to talk about coming from a lot of different angles, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So before we get into some puzzle pieces, you actually contacted me and said, hey, if you want to do an episode on Capone, I'm down. And so I'm just curious, like, what was your initial, like, thought when you saw this thing? Was this something you had been, like, really looking forward to, or did it kind of catch you off guard? What made you excited to talk about it?
I wasn't really, like, I had seen something about it before, about Josh Trank doing a Capone movie, and I hadn't really thought too much about it because I like gangster movies, but they're not something that I'm, like, actively looking forward to often. It's usually not until they come out that I'm actually getting really hyped.
I'm the same way.
It has to be based. Yeah. So I didn't get too intrigued, and then I saw that really shitty trailer that he put out. And I mean, the trailer itself, like, the content was fine, but, you know, he did that thing where he posted it on his Twitter, and all the YouTube channels were, like, taking that and putting it up, and it was just this, like, this awful 480, just gross-looking trailer that made everything look awful, which I think was probably a misstep. I think, I don't know what it is about Josh Trank making missteps on Twitter, but he is really good at it, and as much as I like the guy, he really needs to just delete his account because he's not good at Twitter.
Yeah.
So I saw that, and I was able to look past the 480 ugliness, and I saw that it wasn't really a standard gangster picture. Mm-hmm. It was I had missed the memo that it was about the last year of Capone's life, and that's something I really don't know that much about. You know, I've seen Capone in so many movies. He's a very prominent aspect of one of my favorite TV shows of all time. There's a lot about Capone that I've seen, but I've never really seen anything about his last year. You know, the most I've ever seen is him heading to Alcatraz. And then after that, it's just a mystery to
right.
me. So that was intriguing. And then, of course, you have Tom Hardy in this like ghoul makeup, just mumbling and slowly dying and shitting himself. And I was just like, this looks really good. And then the first reviews came out where it was something like, and there was a lot of snark, of course, because sure. that's how you know, sell headlines. And it was like, if I don't know who was asking for 2 hours of Tom Hardy shitting himself, but here we are. Yeah. And I was like, that's what I want in a movie. So I was pretty hyped going in, certainly, but it was a very sudden hype. It was last minute hype.
Keep your Mad Max sequel. Give me Tom Hardy just mumbling and screaming and chomping on cigars. That's what I want.
Exactly. So yeah, I haven't bought any other releases during this whole on demand renaissance with the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I just don't have that much spare income because I spend so much money. I mean, on like adult things, but also I buy so many Blu-rays for my collection and to review on my channel that I really don't have the money to spend $20, on something that I can only watch on Amazon or whatever.
Right.
I haven't watched The Invisible Man yet because I didn't get to see it in theaters. Mm. I haven't watched Trolls World Tour, although I'm sure it's a masterpiece.
Totally.
So this is my first big release of 2020 since, I guess, Birds of Prey.
Yeah, right.
And I gotta say, best movie of the year, Capone.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is going to be an interesting place to jump into some puzzle pieces to know that you are that big on the movie. I'm excited to talk about it now. So let's get into some puzzle pieces. What do you got for your first one?
All right. So actually, I want to start with some straight facts that I wouldn't count this as a puzzle piece.
Okay.
Unless you're the puzzle master here. So you can decide. But I just want to start with some straight facts. Anyone who compares Capone directly to Gotti as a means of putting down Josh Trank's work is a fucking idiot. Just going to put that out there. I don't know if you want to count Gotti as a puzzle piece.
Sort of like an anti-puzzle piece.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an anti-puzzle piece. Because I've seen a lot of that where it's... and it makes sense. I mean, I think... Was Redbox the one that put out Gotti?
I think so. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, so... And of course, it has the same shitty generic title. I think that Fonzo is a much better title for this film. Mm. But they changed it to Capone, presumably because they wanted to sell more, which I think it's one of those studio things that always like, no, you're wrong, guys, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And they never get the memo. But Gotti is like basically the antithesis of Capone. It is a film that is extremely generic. It is humorous. That is one thing that they have in common, is both are humorous, although I think for different reasons. Both are cringy, again, for different reasons. But Gotti presents itself as a fairly straightforward kind of, like Goodfellas riff almost. Mm-hmm. Where it's just this, I'm a gangster and I'm going to talk about my life leading up to my, inevitable death.
Yeah.
And that's about it. Whereas Capone, I'm sure there's other biopics like Capone. I'm just not like thinking of them right off the top of my head. But I can't remember the last time I watched a biopic that really didn't go into the life of its character at all,
right,
beyond his anxieties. Because really, you could replace Al Capone with any rich asshole succumbing to a mental disorder.
Sure.
And it doesn't change that much. Like, it really isn't about Al Capone. It's about a guy dealing with his inner demons while also having a severe case of neurosyphilis.
Yeah, I have a feeling, and I haven't watched any interviews with Josh Trank or anything, but he must have had somebody in his family that dealt with this kind of thing to want to tell this story. I mean, he wrote this, directed it, and it's like, you know, why exactly, you know?
Yeah, I had the same thought process. Yeah, I mean, he's so in deep with this one. And of course, it's his big, like, in theory, triumphant return. Mm-hmm. It's him making up for all the mistakes he has either made or has been perceived to have made. And this is all a long way to go for me to say I don't like critics.
Yeah, well, I think starting off with Gotti is appropriate as an anti-puzzle piece. And yeah, you see a lot of critics are comparing it there. And I think you're completely right. It's not an appropriate comparison. I would actually say my first puzzle piece, which I'll jump into, is a better version of that, which would be the Johnny Depp movie Black Mass, when he played Whitey Bulger, which was... I would put somewhere between Capone and Gotti as far as how successful of a movie it is. But it's still the idea of taking this big, kind of larger than life movie star actor and putting him through this huge transformation that is really kind of, at least on the surface, the selling point of the movie. Just you put that face right there on the poster, and it's like, oh, okay, so this guy who I've seen in a million things is doing this. Okay, I guess I kind of got to see this. And so that's why the thought of Black Mass as a movie itself, kind of a little forgettable, but that performance from Johnny Depp, definitely one of the more memorable of his, you know, last decade or so of performances. And I think this kind of I think it's almost like the better version of what they did with Gotti.
Yeah. And I think it also, I mean, there's also the sort of ghoulish makeup. Yep. I think, less so with Johnny Depp, but I think that, if I remember correctly in that film, he has a very, less than
it's off putting. That's for sure. I actually rewatched the trailer this morning and I was like, oh yeah. Like, especially around the eyes, it was almost like Uncanny Valley.
Yeah. I think that's a good one. I actually have a very large list of movies of puzzle pieces. Mm-hmm. No other gangster movies on my list.
Beautiful. That'll work out well. I only have one more gangster movie on my list, but why don't we go to your next piece?
All right. So I'm gonna do that thing that I seem to always do, which is mention a couple pieces to get to my main piece.
Do it.
So I've never actually, I realized, that I haven't actually watched a lot of movies about dementia or mental decline. Mm-hmm. Just cause I was trying to think, I was like racking my brain. And so I did a little Google search and I've never seen Still Alice starring Julianne Moore, mm-hmm. Which is about dementia. And I've never seen The Taking of Deborah Logan, which makes me the worst horror fan alive, I know. But I know that one is about dementia through the like concepts of a ghost or demonic storyline. Mm. So I haven't seen those, but there is a film that had a very big effect on me as a child. And it's one that I don't think a lot of kids had in their repertoire. And that's On Golden Pond. Mm-hmm. I watched the shit out of this VHS tape when I was a kid. It was this and RoboCop. Those were the two big ones for me.
Nice.
And On Golden Pond, basically, it's about it's a family drama. And a big chunk of it is this wife who has to come to terms with her husband's mental decline. Husband played by Henry Fonda. And, it's that. Also, there's a big thing of water by the house. You know, there's the titular Golden Pond.
There you go.
Which some might say that's a bit of a stretch. But I say Josh Trank, big on Golden Pond fan.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to put it out there. And, you know, when Josh Trank inevitably mentions on Twitter how correct at Michael Keane is about his comparison to On Golden Pond, I will be triumphant once again. I'm just saying.
I think that scenario may play itself out. I certainly hope so.
That motherfucker needs to respond to me on Twitter. Like, I have sucked the dick of his movie already, and I got nothing. I got nothing.
I think On Golden Pond could be a good alternate title for this movie.
Yeah.
It works, yeah. Right? He's on the Golden Pond.
Which, by the way, highly recommend On Golden Pond. I haven't watched it in over a decade. Actually, probably more than 15 years. But it's trapped in my memory, and I remember it being a very atmospheric and beautiful film. Mm-hmm. And, you know, tragic, not unlike this film.
There you go.
And Josh Trank's career.
Well, I will, I guess, stay in that realm there of the dementia and the declining mental health, and go with a movie that I usually cite as the most depressing movie I've ever seen. And it's something that I was reminded of while watching this movie, which I did enjoy Capone, but it was also quite the bummer I felt with everything going on with this character. And this movie is the 2007 movie The Savages with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Laura Linney, which also, you know, deals with these two characters. Their father is, you know, dealing with dementia, and there's also like the added layer of he was never really a good father to begin with, and they have to take care of him, and it's just so depressing. And so I thought there was some parallels there with Capone and with the kind of father he is in this movie, and, you know, whether or not he's, you know, been there for his family, and whether or not, you know, his gangster lifestyle is, you know, what defines him and everything. And then also just the dementia stuff and just how sad and depressing all that is. And, you know, I don't know, I guess I just, that kind of thing must affect me. I'm realizing as I, you know, as I watched this movie and as I think back to how depressing I always felt The Savages was, even though I know a lot of people did like that movie and some people even called it like a dark comedy and like, there's funny moments, I guess, but I mean, it was just, overall such a bummer for me that it's always hard for me to even look at that end of the movie. But yeah, have you seen The Savages?
I have not. That's another one that when I did my little Google search, I was like, fuck, another movie that I haven't seen that I should have.
You could have a nice depressing triple feature with those movies, probably.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, just to bounce off of that, the first time I watched Capone was with my wife, and we both have kind of dealt with that kind of loss mm-hmm. in our lives, but it's definitely affected her more. And she has a hard time with realistic depictions of cognitive loss mm-hmm. And of, you know, like an older person slowly deteriorating. And just to show how good this film is at doing that, mm-hmm. She had a hard fucking time with Capone. You know, not as, you know, it wasn't as bad as what I imagine like a Requiem for a Dream would be, which is a good puzzle piece I didn't have in my list, but that's one to add in.
Sure.
There. But you know, not quite that level of depressing, but considering how fun I think Capone is,
yeah,
it is remarkable how much it gets right about that kind of tragic thing that a lot of people have to go through.
Yeah.
And This might be a bit of a shots fired statement, but I think that a lot of people who are criticizing it for not being, I don't know, smart enough or even good enough of any high quality, I don't think they've gone through any real, like, serious traumas in their life. Mm. You know, that could be me overstepping a boundary, but it just seems weird to me that anyone who has been affected by that sort of thing, like, really affected, would, like, kind of sidestep this film.
Sure. Yeah, not recognize that there is something at play here. Regardless of how much you like the movie, there is something that's being explored other than, you know, just gangster movie.
Exactly. I think that's, you know, what made me most happy watching Capone was the fact that it really isn't a gangster movie. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people saw that and got frustrated and annoyed because it's that... like with Drive, that lady who sued the producers of Drive because it wasn't enough like Fast and the Furious. And, you know, as much as I love the Fast and Furious franchise, it's like, no, it's deeper and better than Fast and Furious, you dumb bitch. And Capone is, you know, I mean, Capone's not better than, say, Goodfellas or Casino or what have you, but it's better than a lot of gangster movies, and yeah. It's more interesting than a lot of gangster movies.
I think that's an absolutely fair statement there. So what do you got for your next piece?
My next one, this is a little low on my list, but I'm going to skip to it so I can beat you to it. I think this one's a little obvious. The Shining.
Yes.
So it's a tale of a man with severe health issues. On one hand, alcoholism, and on the other, neurosyphilis. Contending with ghosts representative of his own worst issues. All while going crazy in a big house in the middle of nowhere. Of course, then there's the big party where Capone is the guest of honor.
Definitely.
And during that sequence, he even confronts a well-dressed version of his younger self, which looks to be a very direct parallel to one Delbert Grady. And what's the name of Capone's imaginary son, who turns out to be just an extension of himself? Tony. And then, of course, you have like a bunch of fucking hallways and wandering around and shit like that. But a lot of very, like, direct parallels to The Shining that I feel like can't be coincidence. And that might just be, I mean, Josh Trank is of the age where The Shining was almost certainly a big part of his childhood.
Sure.
So I can imagine that even if it wasn't intended, a lot of those things just kind of subconsciously come out.
Yeah.
Or it could just be that thing with The Shining where a lot of coincidences. It's the Room 237 syndrome where you come up with all kinds of parallels that aren't really there.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not in this case. Those parallels are 100% there. And it's...
Oh, thank God I'm not crazy.
Yeah, no, it's 100%. All the things you just said were... it was on my list as well. And all those reasons are totally apt. And I'll just throw in there as a little mini puzzle piece to tie into The Shining. The balloon from It. you also get that with the kid.
Yep.
So we got a lot of Stephen King in there. So...
Yeah,
but
this is a horror story. I mean, this is a ghost story masquerading as a gangster film.
It is,
and I just want to shuck this film stick so hard. It's covered in it's like half erect Winkie covered in excrement. I just want to.
So, I'll go on to my next piece. How about that? I do have, you know, one more fairly obvious gangster movie to bring up, and that is last year's Martin Scorsese movie, The Irishman, which, you know, of course, this is also a look at the sad, I've used the word depressing before, but depressing, lonely final year of life of this larger than life gangster figure. And that is, you know, exactly the kind of thing that, you know, after many, many years of doing gangster movies, Martin Scorsese was interested in exploring with The Irishman, and I think did so amazingly. I love that movie, and that's a movie that has opened itself up more and more and more as I get away from it. And I haven't seen it in months, but I find myself liking it more the more I think about it. And I feel like both of these movies are coming from a similar place of, you know, we've seen the gangster thing over and over and over again through the years. What happens at the end of all that? What happens to these guys? They're just such big figures within, you know, popular culture and then in real life. And, you know, how did it end for these people? And, you know, the outlook on that is not so good.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of serendipity there. I read somewhere that, because someone, I don't remember which article, it might have been Variety, but they asked Josh Trank about The Irishman, and I guess this was in the can before they finished The Irishman, or at least before it came out. And Josh Trank kind of hit a bit on the similarities and basically what you said. It's interesting how that has kind of how they popped out at the same time. These really dark examinations of the other side of that lifestyle. Something that, I mean, Scorsese has looked at before, but in a far less extreme case.
Sure.
You know, I think most of his, you know, most of his gangster movies, they end with, well, and then I died alone and sad,
yeah,
or something like that, or I got buried in a cornfield with my brother, or whatever. But yeah, The Irishman is definitely the one where he just takes that on as the primary message of the film. And you know, I saw there's some Letterboxd review. It was some asshole who said, like, you know, it's like the last act of The Irishman for the entire runtime of The Irishman.
Right, I think I saw that too.
Yeah, which, fuck that guy. fucking lame. I cannot even begin to explain how much I hate quips in film journalism. It drives me fucking crazy.
Yeah. So what do you got next for your next piece?
Let's go with 1961's Last Year at Marienbad. This is a French experimental film, or I guess avant-garde. I wouldn't say it's just experimental, but it's very much sort of the kind of Antonioni style of, or Bresson style of trying to be anti-cinema.
Mm.
And it's probably the weirdest movie I could come up with. That's one thing about Capone, is it's very much bizarro cinema.
Sure.
It's not really a mainstream film, which again, I guess also kind of contributes to the negative response. But Last Year at Marienbad is basically just a bunch of rich people in a big hotel that's not totally dissimilar from Capone's Florida estate. And they're just like kind of being artsy French people. And this one guy is like, yo, broad, I met you once or something. And she's like, no, I don't think so. Oh, no, I'm pretty sure I did. Oh, I'm not so sure. And then they have a lot of back and forth, and there's a lot of borderline mime bullshit. And it's a good movie, I should say. It's a good film. It's not a favorite, just because it's a little tough to sit through. Whereas this is extremely entertaining from front to back. But it's all about that kind of mental prison, and you know, it's not a horror film, but it has a very haunting atmosphere that also reminds me of a ghost story. And so that kind of, you know, ghost story plus big house located somewhere, and a bunch of people dressed fairly well while talking bullshit kind of gave me the vibes of Last Year at Marienbad. And I don't really have any, I can't think of anything really deep to correlate between the two beyond that. But I wouldn't be surprised. Josh Trank seems like a bit of a film school guy.
Sure.
If that makes any sense. And I could see him pulling Last Year at Marienbad out of his hat and being like, look at all these references to Last Year at Marienbad.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I wonder, that makes me think, I've, you know, never seen that movie, but the way you talk about it, like, it seems like the kind of movie that, you know, is kind of like at odds with its audience maybe a little bit, you know, throughout, which is what I think that,
yeah, it's,
this
it's
is.
Yeah, it's a film that's antagonistic towards its audience, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I wonder, you know, this movie Capone coming out, you know, now, if we hadn't had what's going on and it had gotten a theatrical release, I wonder what their response would have been. I wonder if it would have been like way worse than even the mixed reviews it's gotten. I have a feeling it would have been like one of those kind of movies that's kind probably. That's kind of the main story, is the walkouts and the, you know, all that kind of stuff.
It feels almost like a and I wouldn't count this as a puzzle piece, but it almost feels like a Freddy Got Fingered.
Yeah.
where it's like a really smart movie, but a lot of people in the mainstream would not possibly understand what makes it smart.
Yeah.
And not even by any fault of their own intelligence, just it's something that is so out of the mainstream that it's hard to wrap your head around it when you're just going to a movie to see something specific. You know, Freddy Got Fingered, of course, you're looking at a silly comedy. Capone, you're looking at a gangster flick.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the movie and you're like, well, not what I expected.
Yeah. I didn't expect Freddy Got Fingered to come up in this conversation, but I'm glad it did.
If I can, anytime I can get Freddy Got Fingered into a conversation, I will do so.
So I'll go with my next piece. And, you know, I think there's probably more than one David Lynch comparison that could be made throughout this thing, but I thought of the dinner scene in Eraserhead. And just how awkward that dinner is, and then how just gross the food is. And it just made me think of the dinner scenes in this movie in Capone. And especially there's that one towards the end where he starts like really staring at the food. And I think it's like a steak that's like bleeding, and just, mm-hmm. just how like, just, you know, disgusting it is, and how in his mind it's even, you know, worse than it actually is, and freaking him out and everything. And so I just thought of that moment in Eraserhead.
I love you. That's such a good comparison. I didn't even think about it. That's so good. Yes, 100%.
Beautiful.
God, I really want Josh Trank to. It's actually I have like two or three qualms with Capone. Not even real criticisms, just qualms. I wish it had gone just one step crazier.
Yeah, I completely agree. This movie would be, for me, this is like a 3.5 out of 5 for me. This would have been a solid 4 if it was a little crazier, I think.
Yeah, I gave it a 4. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is just my general love of the central performance, mm-hmm. and the concept. I would be just singing its praises non, like I would turn my Twitter account into a Capone stan account. If it just went, like, right now it's one middle finger up at the audience. If it had been two middle fingers up at the audience, mm-hmm. or like two middle fingers and an erection up at the audience, that would have fucking done it for me. That would have just, like, best movie of all time injected into my fucking veins, Mr. Trank.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so if it had gone like a little more Lynchy, and you know, like more dream stuff, you know, maybe that final dream sequence where he's just massacring people. Yeah. If it had gone just one step further, we would have been in some serious glory lands right there.
Hell yeah. So what do you got next? I only got one more, by the way. So,
oh, wow.
I'm happy to hear him.
I'm going to give two runner-ups to my Shining moment, because I actually had two other films on my list before I came up with The Shining. Mm-hmm. And those were The Others and The Changeling. And they kind of go hand in hand with The Shining. They're ghost stories. I feel like Capone's dealing with metaphorical ghosts more closely resembles The Shining, but I think the lighting of many of the film's more tense scenes more mm-hmm. closely resembles The Others, which is another movie where seemingly real people turn out to be something else entirely. Sure. Looking at you, Matt Dillon. And then The Changeling, of course, is also a haunted house movie about a lonely, tragic figure. And it was the first one that really came to mind, just because The Changeling is always the first ghost movie to come to mind. Mm-hmm. Which I don't know if you've ever seen The Changeling with the amazing George C. Scott, but fucking great film.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it. Certainly The Others.
It has a great Blu-ray that I highly recommend. But I would say something that I came up with early that I think might be a bit of a stretch was Ingmar Bergman's Wild Strawberries. You could also maybe go with a Persona. You could make a case for Persona, but mm-hmm. I think Wild Strawberries, it's about a man who is approaching death. I mean, he's an old motherfucker, and he goes on a road trip and kind of contends with his perceived past mistakes while encountering all these young people, and you get a lot of flashbacks. And it's, you know, it's not a grim movie, but the idea of someone reaching the end of their life and contending with their errors that mm-hmm. that led to where they are now, really struck me. And that was, you know, it's a tough one, again, to really make it a good argument for, but it was the first to come to mind. Was Wild Strawberries.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I think I've never seen Wild Strawberries, but to speak to those other two, I mean, absolutely, that was kind of the first thing that struck me while watching the movie, is that, like, oh, this is actually just a ghost story, kind of, in, you know, in the way that it's being set up and the way that it's being structured.
Oh yeah. And I think, I mean, When just to go like to go directly to Capone again, when did you realize that Matt Dillon wasn't real?
Not until pretty far on. I mean, they kind of they managed to trick me with that for a little while.
So I didn't realize. So I figured it out during the fishing trip, and then I had it kind of affirmed for me during the Wizard of Oz screening. I think that was the part where I was like, with just the framing and using Wizard of Oz, I was like, oh, that motherfucker's fake.
I think that was probably where it hit me too. Yeah.
But upon rewatching it, so there's that. Okay, so it cuts to the scene of Matt Dillon fucking some broad, and he picks up the phone. He's talking to Capone, and he says he'll be going that way. And then it cuts back to Capone sitting next to his radio, and on the radio, it continues the conversation that they were having, and it's you know, some gangsta guy in a radio show talking about how he needs to go see Capone, and like Capone needs him or whatever to his lady friend. And then as soon as that radio program kind of finishes up, Matt Dillon appears behind Capone and like, I think like grabs his shoulders or something and starts talking. And I was so mad at myself for not realizing on my first viewing,
right,
as soon as that radio program came on, that Matt Dillon was not real.
That's interesting. I like that a lot. that does seem like so clear, but yeah, I mean, they did a great job.
Yeah, and that will lead into my last puzzle piece. But what's yours?
So I was just gonna talk for a minute about just how crazy we've kind of talked around it a little bit, but Tom Hardy's central performance in this is, and just the look of it and the sound of it and just everything he's doing. And in a good way, I was reminded a little bit of Marlon Brando in The Island of Dr. Moreau. And just, I mean, he's so like gross looking under all that makeup, and he's just so big and so just the voice, it's just, what in the world is going on here? And it doesn't necessarily work in Dr. Moreau, but it works here. And it's interesting to go that big and reel it into something that kind of works in a way. And I mean, yeah, I mean, that makeup is just unbelievable. That's the thing that stands out to me the most, is that makeup.
Yeah, it's great. And you know what? Another crazy thing is, I remember when that trailer hit, all these motherfuckers on Twitter were just like, oh, that awful makeup. And also, I think there was a Reddit thread where they were just like shitting on the makeup. And, you know, again, that 480 trailer, ugh. But it looks really good in the movie, and it makes sense. You know, I feel like a lot of people criticize this movie for things that, when you watch the goddamn film, are part of the film. Like, it's right. Part of the movie.
He's not doing like, so well.
Yeah, he's kind of fucked. He's I think 49 years old, and he has like, I mean, he's basically an 80-year-old man.
Yeah, that kind of blew my mind when they said his age. I was like, Jesus Christ, he is just falling apart, man.
Yeah, and to be fair, he doesn't look much like Capone. It's not a resemblance that exists.
Mm-hmm.
But within the context of the film and what we're presented with, it looks right. Continuing on from that, his voice, which, you know, very mumbly, just like Marlon Brando's performance, also within the context of the film. I made a YouTube video about my initial reaction to Capone, where I dressed up like Capone, yeah. Had a carrot in my mouth, and I went on this bit of a diatribe about the mumbling, and everybody complaining about the fucking mumbling. Yeah, because he's fucked up, man. What? Like, come on. And he has a fucking cigar in his, or carrot, in his mouth for like 90% of the runtime. Oh, I'm shocked that it's hard to understand him. And another thing, he's not that hard to understand if you just pay the fuck attention.
Yeah.
Like, I think I might have misheard one or two lines throughout the film. I think that there's this misconception ever since The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
A film in which he is legitimately hard to comprehend, that it's hard to understand Tom Hardy. other than that film, I've never had a problem understanding Tom Hardy. Sure, like sometimes he'll have like maybe a really tough Cockney accent. Okay, it is more challenging, sure, but it's not that hard, guys. Like anyone right. who like legitimately complains, there was an article when Capone was released by some fucking asshole who was saying that Tom Hardy like made a career out of not like mumbling and it being hard to understand him. What a base level bullshit way to criticize an actor. Like, yes, most of his performances, he has some sort of speech thing. You know, there's just always some thing about his speech. Pardon him for creating a character every goddamn time.
Right.
I had no problem understanding him. I don't understand anyone. You're either lazy or you're just being willfully ignorant and you want something to bitch about and you've chosen his speech.
I bet you if you did a Venn diagram of people who complain about that and people who think Scorsese only makes gangster movies, it would be the exact same people.
Oh, yes, 100%. Yeah. Age of Innocence, motherfuckers. Age of Innocence.
All right. What do you got for your last piece?
So I did also have Repulsion on here. It's just something I listed as an also ran. But my last one is two movies that I couldn't decide between.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of which I'm a huge fan of, but both of which are at very least good.
Mm-hmm.
And those are A Beautiful Mind and Shutter Island. Both films that, well, one of which is a Martin Scorsese film.
Sure.
But both films are about a guy who, you know, sees the world in a way that is not what it is.
Sure.
And I think A Beautiful Mind is the most obvious parallel with the whole Matt Dillon character thing. But both films deal, you know, have characters that don't really exist or don't exist as they are perceived.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big part of Capone. I know that's a big part of Capone. We both saw the same movie.
I'll co-sign that.
Yeah. Between Matt Dillon and Tony. A lot of stuff that isn't quite right. And by the end of the film, you realize that, oh, that's why it's a little off.
By the way, was the girl Matt Dillon was having sex with, was she a ghost?
I think so. The way I interpret that scene, and I'm working on my big video essay, so we'll see how this evolves during my various viewings of the film. But the way I interpreted it is, you know, throughout the film, we see Capone kind of envisioning various... subjective ways of seeing his past life as a gangster.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Dillon's character isn't, as far as I know, based on any real person. It's an amalgamation of his previous contacts, these people that he worked with when he was younger. And I think that he also perceives Matt Dillon character as sort of a version of himself. Just like in the dream sequence, there's the guy that shanks the fuck out of the person in the chair. I think that's just another version of Capone. You know, he's just seeing various iterations. And, you know, it used to be he was just fucking broads left and right. You know, I believe in that scene, I could be mistaken, but I believe it's implied that Matt Dillon's character is married or something.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just some broad on the side. Of course, Al Capone was well known for having extramarital affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was just him kind of... perceiving himself in a different fashion. Or it could just be that it was what was happening in the radio show, although I find that highly unlikely that they would just be like doggy style fucking on a radio program at that period in time.
Right.
Of course, nowadays, radio programs, it's all doggy style fucking. But at the time, I don't think that was too common. But that's just how I interpreted it.
For sure. For sure. And to the puzzle pieces, absolutely. Those are both good ones. I was actually thinking about including Shutter Island on my list. I hadn't, but the mind state and the way that the character is like putting himself into those situations and seeing versions of things that aren't necessarily true. Just continuing that theme that we went back in our first puzzle pieces about that crumbling mind. But I think we'll go ahead and do the finished puzzle and then get into thoughts. Oh, you got...
Ooh, wait, one more.
You got one more?
Okay, so this is kind of another anti-puzzle piece, but I think it's necessary. because we wouldn't have this movie without one other film. There's one film that directly resulted in Capone happening. And I, on the one hand, am sad about that film, but on the other hand, happy that it gave us this movie and gave us, hopefully, a very special trajectory for Josh Trank's career. And that film is Fantastic Four, and it's a piece of shit. And it is more than responsible for us, rather than getting a Josh Trank Star Wars movie, getting a Josh Trank Capone movie. And I honest to God feel so bad for Josh Trank.
I know
this
right?
guy. He might be a total douchebag. I don't know. A lot of film people are. You know, he could be the douchiest little film brat of all time. I don't know, but it is so sad that he was given this opportunity. He had, I would say, too far reaching of an idea. For something that should have just been a simple, dumb superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not jive. He did not jive with the people he worked with. And it fell apart in, I guess what you would best describe as a spectacular fashion. And, you know, resulted in almost sort of a blacklisting,
I feel like.
And so I think Fantastic Four belongs there because without it, we just wouldn't have this movie.
You know, I actually have never seen his Fantastic Four. I think this is actually my first Josh Trank movie. I didn't see, what was it, Chronicle?
Chronicle's very good.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
This is an opinion that not a lot of people share, and I understand why, because the guy's a fucking asshole, and I hope he never works again. But I really like Max Landis's writing. Mm. I don't like him as a person, necessarily.
Sure.
I've met him once, and he was really nice, but he seems like a very toxic and awful person.
Sure.
That said, I have never watched a Max Landis movie that I did not enjoy.
Mm.
I think that he had a very interesting voice. His TV show, which I am suddenly like, my brain isn't working and I can't remember the name, but his TV show about the holistic detective was really good. And I think the saddest thing about his downfall beyond the people that he hurt was that that show got canceled. And I think films like American Ultra are really good.
Oh, yeah,
and Chronicle is a fucking great movie. And, you know, I think a lot of people kind of look past it now because it got, I would say, it got that like too popular thing where mm-hmm. it really should have stayed at a certain level of popularity, because at some point you go over the edge and people start finding ways to, you know, hit out at you and, you know, really dig into your flaws, which I hate to break it to you. Every movie has flaws. It's a hard thing to accept, people, but every movie has flaws. But yeah, Chronicle is really good. I haven't watched it in years, but I quite enjoyed it. Of course, Dane DeHaan also in there, a career that did not go as planned.
No, not quite. So before I finish it up, should I see Fantastic Four?
That's tough. That's really tough. It is not good.
Yeah.
And actually, I'll tell you this. I don't think I've ever actually checked it on Letterboxd because I've never properly watched it. I've watched it, everything in, like, all said and done, I've seen the movie, but I've never watched it front to back because I can't, it's just not, it's a type of cringe that I don't particularly like. I don't make it a habit of watching movies I don't enjoy. The only time I really will finish a movie that I actively don't like is I'm either in the theater or I need to review it. Like, I just finished watching all three of the first Vice Academy movies.
Mm.
That was a fucking pain in my ass, but I did it because it was for a video.
For sure.
Fantastic Four is not a good movie. That said, it has some very interesting ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you wanted to, like, you know, just see, kind of examine what happened to Josh Trank's career. It's a fascinating examination because there's a lot of really cool ideas. What he did with Dr. Doom, I wouldn't say is good, but it's a very intriguing concept. There's a lot of body horror to it that I think I'm willing to bet Josh Trank had more of in his original version. I think when he was first promoting it and it was first announced, he described it as David Cronenberg, like Cronenberg's version of a superhero movie.
Nice.
And you kind of get that, but it's definitely hampered. And there's a lot of just bullshit. And it does that thing that Avengers Age of Ultron does at the end, where they cut off before they say the name, but does it in the most infuriating and annoying fashion that just makes you want to scream at the movie.
God.
So it's a tough one. I can't say whether or not you should watch it. You know, I guess if you want to have an opinion on every superhero movie, go watch Fantastic Four. But then again, I'm someone who lists the original Fantastic Four as a movie that I actually enjoy, which is not a popular opinion. And I recognize the flaws. I'm not a big Tim Story fan. There's something about it that I just like. I don't know what it is. I think it's maybe because I saw it in theaters and I like dumb things, shockingly. But I like the original Fantastic Four. I like Rise of the Silver Surfer. I think that's a pretty fun movie. It's dumber than a sack of dildos, but it's pretty fun. Fantastic Four, a la Josh Trank, not a very fun movie.
Not exactly. All right, well, I'll go ahead and do the finished puzzle, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts here. We kicked it off with an anti-puzzle piece, Gotti, but then we moved into Black Mass, Still Alice, The Taking of Deborah Logan, On Golden Pond, The Savages, also threw in Requiem for a Dream there, The Shining, It, The Irishman, Last Year at Marienbad, Eraserhead, The Others, The Changeling, Wild Strawberries, The Island of Dr. Moreau, Repulsion, you mentioned real quick, A Beautiful Mind, Shutter Island, and then wrapped it up with a little bit on Fantastic Four. So any closing thoughts you have on this one?
If you haven't watched it already, buy it. You know, you might be tempted to rent it. Don't rent it. Buy it. You're going to watch it more than once. I fucking guarantee it. And ignore all the critics not all the critics, some of them liked it, but ignore the shitty critics who immediately quip about Capone shitting himself or quip about Josh Trank. If they do that, then they suck. If they have a negative review and they don't start with that, maybe they have a good point. I'm not going to say that everybody's going to enjoy this. It is not a mainstream film. It is a bizarre flick, but Tom Hardy puts in a great performance. It is extremely entertaining. I have issues with it. It doesn't go into his son's hearing loss for some reason, even though that should be something that Capone deals with. That frustrated me. I found it kind of annoying that it didn't go more into his wife's story, because she was one of his great opponents in their life. She was a very savage lady who I think would have made for a better character, although she is played very well in the film. And there are some extraneous things. Anything dealing with the FBI is generally kind of uninteresting and takes away from the overall concept of the film. But that all said, once you look past those problems, it is a great movie that is not two middle fingers and an erection, but is a solid singular middle finger to the audience, without ever being boring like so many other middle finger movies. So I highly, highly, highly recommend Capone.
Love it. The only other thing I wanted to mention was more so of a question for you. When I think of Capone, I always think of Stephen Graham's performance on Boardwalk Empire. Is there another Capone in movie history that is like a big one for you that you love?
I mean, just the obvious, Robert De Niro in Untouchables. That's like, I mean, I think that's the ultimate as far as mainstream consciousness performance of Capone. I think Stephen Graham's is definitely my favorite.
Yeah.
But that also has to do with Boardwalk Empire being a borderline perfect show.
Yeah.
If you never watched Boardwalk Empire, listener, watch it. It has a bit of a, it stumbles a bit, I think, in the penultimate season. And there's like a lot of, I don't remember the behind the scenes stories, but I think they were like rushing it at the end because it was, it could only do like one more season, but they had like two or three seasons worth of material.
Sure, yeah.
And so they kind of like fast forward a bit, and there's a lot of time skipping, which doesn't serve several characters too well. You know, I feel like, and I could be, this is, I've never rewatched the entire series. I feel like Jeffrey Wright's character got a little fucked in the end. But
sounds about right.
It's a show that in the end like has a perfect conclusion. It's right up there with Mad Men for me as just being a like that's how you're gonna end the show. Perfect. That's exactly how it should end. That is it's not how I expected, but it is exactly what I didn't know that I wanted.
Right.
It's so brilliant. And Stephen Graham's great as Capone.
Great show.
Also, it's a show that talks about Capone's son's hearing loss and deals with that. So that's another thing. Yeah.
Well, right on. I think we covered it. Do you have a movie that you watched recently, another movie that you'd like to recommend?
So I just got a very special set of Blu-rays in. It's the Al Adamson Masterpiece Collection. And if you don't know who Al Adamson is or was, he was a, let's say, a cult trash filmmaker, mostly in the 60s and 70s. And he did not make what you would consider objectively good movies. They often were not the most well shot. They had very questionable acting choices. He did that really, by most accounts, awful Dracula versus Frankenstein movie with the Dracula who has a goatee and is constantly blinking. and the Frankenstein that looks like he's in really bad Tom Hardy ghoul makeup. And so he made some pretty unfortunate films, but they're films that I consider very entertaining. Al Adamson was very well known for putting all the money on screen. You know, he tried to keep the audience entertained, as opposed to a lot of bad B movies of that period that were just like, you know, people talking in the desert or whatever for what seemed like eons, and they never had any right. monster and blah, 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 blah. He had the goods, even if they were kind of low grade goods. And so the Masterpiece Collection is, I believe, 32 movies, if I'm not mistaken, and all but one of them being an Al Adamson movie. The one exception is a documentary called Blood and Flesh, The Real Life and Ghastly Death of Al Adamson. This is from the guy who directed, actually, oddly enough, the guy who directed the documentary about the Island of Dr. Moreau kerfuffle, about how
that
Richard
is
Stanley,
a great documentary.
Yeah. So same guy. I wouldn't say this is quite as good. I think that that one, it helps that it's a very centered film. You know, it's about one very specific troubled production. And this documentary, the first half goes over Al Adamson's career, which is very extensive, so it can't possibly really talk about everything. And then the back half talks about his murder, which is a very tragic story. And it was a great documentary, and it's one of those movies that makes me want to go out and make a movie.
Right.
It also makes me want to go out and not get murdered. So that's a plus too. So I love movies that make me want to go make a movie. I think that's really nice and special. And you learn a lot about a guy who had a lot of passion. So I highly, highly, highly recommend Blood and Flesh, The Real Life and Ghastly Death of Al Adamson. And if you're interested, also recommend his movies. I just watched The Female Bunch. And if it's any indication of what's to come, I'm going to have a great time with the set. It's really beautiful stuff. This is from Severin, who do great work, of course. Yeah, that's my recommendation.
I like it. Well, why don't you tell people where they can find you and everything you're up to?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Michael Keane. That's the easiest place to find all my stuff. I have a YouTube channel that's linked there, where I talk about mostly Blu-rays, but also movies. I'm going to have a really long video essay about Capone sometime in June. And I also am a filmmaker of my own right. I'm not I'm not exactly a Josh Trank, to say the very least. But I've made some fun, dumb movies. Some people enjoy Fatal Future. That's my kind of homage to Neil Breen and the kind of so bad it's good aesthetic. And then I made a far more well-received film, the shot on VHS horror flick, The Head, which is really hard to find on Amazon because they hide it a little bit because they think it's a little too erotic, which fuck them. But it is available on Amazon and on Vimeo on demand. It also should be on Troma on demand at some point relatively soon, but that's not quite, that's in the middle of being finalized. So I highly recommend you go see The Head. It's my current masterpiece, I guess.
go watch that and then listen to our live episode. If you haven't gotten around to listening to that episode, everybody listening, make sure to watch the movie and go give it a listen.
Fuck yeah.
All right, Mike. Well, hey, thanks so much for being here again. It's always great having you on. And I look forward to your Capone episode when that comes up.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Everyone, no matter how big a geek you are, has movies that they haven't seen that have other geeks saying, "How have you never seen this movie?" Well, we're here to help. At the Now You've Seen It podcast, we help you fill those gaps in your geek cred one movie at a time. Each episode, a guest who is watching the movie for the first time joins our rotating cast of hosts and panelists to discuss the movie and compare seeing it through fresh eyes versus seeing it with eyes filtered through the lens of nostalgia. You can find Now You've Seen It on Facebook at facebook.com/nowyouveseenit, no apostrophe, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Capone with Michael Keane. I had a great time talking to him about this movie, and I am excited about all the other movies that we've got coming up for you guys. We've got, I've got a whole week of recordings scheduled right now, a whole lot of episodes that are going to take us through into June. So make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice, and you'll always get those episodes as soon as they come out. We also have a Patreon over at patreon.com/piecingpod, where as soon as these episodes get recorded, I am posting them early in advance for you all. So, go sign up for the Patreon if you'd like and get those advanced episodes as well as some of the music I've been working on. So you could also follow us over on social media at Piecing Pod, join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And as always, I just want to say thank you so much for everyone who's out there listening. I have been crazy busy over here working on new music. I've mentioned it a few times over the last couple months since this whole quarantine thing started. And it's insane the amount that I've been doing. I'm going to have probably my next two or three albums ready to go by the time I get back to regular everyday work. It's been great and crazy as far as productivity is concerned, let's put it that way. And I am going to close this thing out with a piece of my music, as I always do. This is a track that I just finished, maybe, I'm not sure, but it's a track that I started way back in early 2019, and then it's just sat there unfinished, and I think I might have finished it last night. It's called Secret Places, and I don't know if it'll be on my next album, or the album after that, or where it's going to come out, but it's a cool track, so enjoy it, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon. Oh, 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 oh
And all points west.